listening to The Cooler Ring, a podcast made for manufacturing marketers. Here are Carmen Perry and Jeff White.
Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White. Joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm excited for today's conversation. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Yeah. Another beautiful day on the East Coast.
You know, they all are. They all are. It never rains or snows here out east.
Certainly not the 10 inches we got last night.
No, that doesn't happen at all.
And we get the Canadian part out of the way.
Exactly. Well, but look, today's topic is one that, man, you know, something gets talked about an awful lot in business. Like, you don't have to pry too hard to get a business executive of almost any stripe to want to talk about innovation.
It's like one of the double spots on the bingo card, actually.
Exactly.
The word innovation, you've checked a few boxes.
Getting them to do something innovative isn't always the easiest thing, but they'll talk about it. And what I love about today's guest is just the kind of lens that he brings to this, frankly, the noble cause of trying to inject more innovation in the corporate world writ large, but specifically, obviously, manufacturers is our primary interest. So I'm really excited to dive in.
Yeah, lots of experience in this regard, too. So it's going to be an excellent conversation. So joining us today is John Patron. And John is a seasoned marketing leader in the chemical space, largely Fortune 100 kind of space, most recently with DuPont. But welcome to the Cooler Ring, John. Glad to have you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Carmen. Glad to be here. And I'm looking forward to talking about innovation and maybe double-clicking on that and sharing some of my experiences of how to drive growth in an enterprise.
Yeah, look, that's let's, before we jump right into the meat of the conversation, maybe give our listeners a bit of a background about of your career and kind of what's led you to your current juncture.
Yeah, thanks. So, yeah, I've had an interesting background, kind of a technical background. So, you know, a material science and physics background. So I went to school here in Minnesota, graduate school and undergraduate. And then I had various, you know, marketing roles at smaller companies as well as larger enterprises like at DuPont. So I've been, you know, product manager, product marketer, you know, led global teams for a while. I also led an engineering group for about 4 years at a company. You know, one role that we'll probably talk quite a bit about, you know, while I was at DuPont, you know, for almost 5 years, I was an innovation and growth leader. So that kind of bridged both kind of marketing and R&D. So it's a very unique role within DuPont. But, you know, that was a great role to have and experience for about 5 years.
And, you know, it's an interesting title to have. It's like, we need to innovate and grow. Let's put that one guy in charge of it, right? It's only like it's just a $1.5 billion or so business unit.
Yeah. Right.
But I guess that's got to be a little daunting, John. I mean, as you get that initial assignment, let's kind of just step back and say, okay, now what? How do you approach that? How do you think about innovating in the various aspects of a business and enterprise of that size? And how do you kind of begin to, eat that elephant one bite at a time?
Yeah. So it was definitely a journey over a couple of years to really put a significant that. But, you know, initially, when I got that role, and this is like 2018, you know, I thought initially it was going to be, oh, I'm going to manage all the innovations in our portfolio and more or less manage a spreadsheet of projects. But actually, this was a role in DuPont, and it was really, you know, not surprising with DuPont being a 200-year-old company, innovations in their DNA. I mean, it's just what they do, what everyone does at DuPont. So it really took on much more meaning than just managing innovation projects. It was really about enabling innovation in the organization, in our business, in the water business. And it comes in many facets. So it is thinking about how you drive growth in the organization through innovation. It turned out that, you know, one of the goals or objectives of innovation in the water business was half of the year-over-year growth was going to come from innovation revenue from those projects that were or products launched in the last 5 years. So that's may sound relatively straightforward, but you know, the innovation revenue may only be about 25% of the total revenue. So it has to deliver half the growth. The other thing is really thinking about how you approach that and deliver that kind of, you know, goal or objective. It comes from having innovations in your core. In addition, you want to have innovations outside of your core markets and explore new areas to ensure you have, you know, sustained growth. You know, you have to build capabilities as well of the people. So it really is a very comprehensive program. It doesn't happen overnight, like you said, Carmen. It you know, it takes many years to kind of build that program out.
Let's dive further into that kind of very careful distinction you just made between innovation in the core business versus more kind of experimental markets or experimental plays. How did you have a fundamental different approach in one area versus the other, or a different appetite for risk in one versus the other?
No, it's a great question. You know, the answer is yes to many of your questions. You know, you think about innovating in the core, and many enterprises or companies, they're very good at that. I mean, you have already products in those markets. You're doing incremental changes to them. I mean, think about iPhone 12 to 13 to 14. I mean, Apple does that. They have to do that to stay relevant in the market, but each year it's not significant changes. But you know, they're, you know, through the course of many years, it's actually quite significant. But so those are generally, you know, those markets, you typically know the changes you have to do because you're getting feedback from customers. So, you know, the process that you may use in that is more a planning process or stage gate process, generally lower risk. You may have some elements of it that are new or higher risk that you need to deal with. That's actually quite different than in those new market spaces, Carmen. You might not know the market. You may not even know the problem, and you have to understand, you know, is there a problem that we can solve, that we can address? So inherently, there's just a lot of risk. And the way you approach that is, you know, you find an opportunity, an idea, and then you start de-risking that in kind of a metered funding approach. So you don't throw a lot of people at it, and that, you know, you prioritize your risk areas and de-risk them over time and then have further investment. So it's much like the kind of the VC model. If you think about VCs out there, you know, they have seed stage funding, you know, seed 1, 2, 3, and then series A, B, C. And they're just investing more money with time as the opportunity unfolds and they've de-risked it and it looks like a good, you know, path for revenue generation and profitability. So the approaches are very different. That actually is what makes it kind of difficult of, you know, it takes kind of an ambidextrous thinker of, hey, I've got a portfolio of kind of things I know that will generate revenue. They may cannibalize my current products, but I have them. But now I have to think very differently about this portfolio that has a lot of risk and, you know, opportunities may die very quickly, but it's a very different approach.
I wanted to ask, and maybe this is specific to DuPont, or maybe this is sort of a thing that you think of more broadly, but where are the ideas coming from? Is it open to absolutely everyone to come forward with a concept or an idea? Is there an innovation lab where people are experimenting with new things? How is that structured? Or is it just like, if you have an idea, come to us and we'll put you through this innovation process, I guess?
Yeah. So like in the core markets, I mean, we have, you know, market segment teams they're kind of, you know, managing their portfolio of innovations. Again, those are a little bit more incremental in nature. They're always talking to customers and exploring new pathways. So those teams, as well as people outside of those teams, would manage their ideas and bring them forward. In the new spaces, it is much more open, but we did put kind of a structure in place of, in opposed to just, you know, having all ideas coming from all over the place, we kind of had what we call more strategic themes, like focused, you know, big areas. An example, you know, in the water business, you know, whenever there's energy being generated or created, there's always water needed. You know, it's the water energy nexus. So at a power plant, whether it's coal, gas, nuclear, there's water present. So, but there's a big movement to green energy. So that was kind of, think of that maybe as a potential strategic theme, is green energy. There's lots of ways of creating energy, maybe green hydrogen. You know, there's new nuclear power plants being created that are a little bit smaller. So there's, you know, a lot of opportunities, but we kind of had these themes that we would explore those areas as opposed to just a total wide open space. Having said that, you know, we have a lot of people in the market talking to customers, and they may have ideas, and they can certainly share those and bring those forward, and we would vet them.
John, you've mentioned a few times this notion of the innovation in the core seems to almost, by definition, be more incremental in nature. So how do you nurture more leapfrog innovations in the core business? Because or do you? Because it seems to me that just settling on that being incremental innovation could be limiting, but maybe not.
Right. And, you know, and that's a great question and comment. And that's what, you know, you commonly see in larger companies is, you think about just going back in time when the company started, you know, maybe as a startup, and then it grew to 100 million, and, you know, they're in their market space and they keep evolving and maybe expanding in near adjacencies. But at some point, that market may plateau. And so, you know, you're kind of leveling off. You know, there's kind of diminishing returns of your investment there. So, you know, you need to, you know, explore new pathways and, you know, and put resources into new spaces. So from a resource allocation perspective, I mean, you may, depending on really what the strategic growth profile of your business is you may invest a certain amount of resources in the core for doing, you know, innovation, and then you may invest, you know, another percentage in this new space of just exploring new areas. You know, an example might be for the people, marketers, you know, the R&D people, engineers that are spending time in innovation. It might be 70% in the core, 30% in new, or, you know, whatever what you want to grow in terms of, you know, in those new spaces. If you want to grow more there because the core is very stable, you may be 50-50. So, you know, that's really up to the business to decide, you know, how do I want to invest my resources and other money?
And I'm sure that in your work with DuPont, I'm sure you surveyed other corporate entities to see how they were, you know, managing growth, thinking about managing the innovation pipeline and things of that sort. I'm curious, did you see any kind of examples of people being very intentional about placing, kind of getting new ways of thinking being applied to old core businesses? Like, let's not seek innovation from the people that are talking to the customers every day and have been talking to them every day for the last 20 years, but, you know, a completely new, fresh lens. Any examples of that? Just curious.
Yeah, I mean, I have talked to a number of companies. I mean, you know, you may have, I mean, some companies may approach it as they actually have a group of people that don't have a lot of experience in the core, and they're just, you know, they're not tethered to that thought or that business model, and they're very open to new areas. Alternatively, you may have people that are from the core, but they're very forward thinkers. They have just a tremendous amount of experience. Maybe they've done innovations that have succeeded and others that have failed, and they kind of know, you know, that approach of new ideas and how to test them. So, you know, I would say there's not a recipe or one way, you know, one size fits all of approach of how, you know, what people you use for that. But, you know, I think the key part is you need to test things and you need to explore new paths and you need to de-risk them. And, you know, it's really kind of that approach that you use and to move, you know, these ideas forward.
On that, you know, who is managing or kind of shepherding that idea through to fruition standpoint? I mean, I have to think that this is also one way that you can retain that more ambitious entrepreneurial talent, you know, to be able to offer the opportunity to bring an idea to fruition. And I would assume we haven't yet talked about the process and the gates that people would go through, you know, on that metered funding VC kind of model. You know, how rough is it at the start versus kind of as it begins to refine itself into potentially a, you know, at some point maybe it becomes a core business line?
Yeah, I mean, it can take many paths. I mean, it's certainly, you know, in these new spaces, it's typically not linear. You think about the VC model. I mean, those companies that are investing in these startups, I mean, it's you may have a problem that you've uncovered for a customer set. You know, have an idea or a solution and you go, you know, work and see if that is appropriate for solving that problem. And it may just, you know, be too small. It might not, you might not even have the right technology and then it's done. And then you try other paths. So there's a lot of iteration. It's definitely not a linear path. I mean, when you're doing innovation in the core, it's a little bit more straightforward. I mean, still there can be back and forth, but you know, in this new space, it's a lot of learning and experimenting and testing and trying and de-risking and, you know, maybe going forward and then going backwards. So, you know, an example of some of the areas that we worked on, you know, those, it may take a couple years from initial area of exploration of potential opportunities to you have a product. And, you know, that pathway was zigzaggy.
I'm sure you've seen the design squiggle
diagram
before. It's very, very messy at the start, and then it gets linear, and then it goes all nuts again, and finally it kind of comes out the other side. So,
something you mentioned earlier that's been kind of sticking with me, I'm going to kind of pry a bit, I guess. You'd mentioned about DuPont being like a 200-year-old company, you know, kind of innovation basically baked into their DNA. And then you also mentioned about kind of the upskilling of teams and to foster more innovation and growth. So I'm not saying that there's a juxtaposition there necessarily, but I'm trying to think of, okay, we've got a company, a manufacturer that in some ways is kind of built for innovation. And yeah, I think a lot of people listening to the podcast may find themselves working in companies that they believe to be a lot like that as well. But there may be still some potential that hasn't been unlocked. Have you found, what did you find, any kind of secret sauce as you looked at upskilling folks to foster more innovation and growth? Or are there blind spots that you felt needed to be better addressed, or key learnings that that helped move the yardsticks?
Well, I mean, one area that we probably all can relate to is, you know, typically people think about innovation and you think product, like I'm going to, you know, improve this product. But, you know, bringing new value to customers can be beyond just the product. It could be, you know, a different business model. It could be bringing services to them, you know, helping customers optimize their process using that product, and that may be a service that you do. So, you know, to answer your question, I think that people need to think more openly and open the aperture up of, you know, really beyond product, and really maybe it's business model innovation and exploring new pathways there. So, I mean, it once you start, you know, developing products and you've done that for maybe decades in your career, you know, it kind of gets embedded. You're thinking about incremental changes or, you know, a product. But that business model innovation and thinking beyond that, you know, that takes some time. It takes really some time. And like, how do you do testing and de-risking of those innovations? So that's kind of a new area for, you know, many innovators to explore is, you know, opening the aperture up for what the innovation could be.
Man, I bet there's a lot of people listening that see themselves in that notion of the companies that are very, very, very good at innovating at the product level. But maybe it's just, yeah, opening the lens up further is, that's a really interesting thought. You know, is it just enough to say, hey, guys, let's look at business models and services that we can also innovate in? You know, is it just enough to say it, or did you find that you had to kind of introduce some experiences or training that kind of brought people out of their patterns?
Well, I mean, it actually is a little bit challenging because you think about just an enterprise has its business model. And let's just say they develop products and, you know, they design them, test them, manufacture them, bring them to market. Now you want to, just as an example, let's say you want to help, you know, your customers optimize their process using their products, and that's more of a service. That actually is a change in the company's business model and like the people you need to engage with customers, you know, your, how you charge, you know, what the price is for that, what the revenue stream is. It actually, I mean, conceptually, it sounds very straightforward, but implementing that change can be quite disruptive. And you really have to think holistically how you're going to do that across the organization, you know, and how all those functions, you know, engage with that new offering that you have. So, you know, and that's why it can be limiting, is just because it's such a big hurdle to overcome to make that change. And the revenue might be relatively small at the beginning compared to your product revenue that you're like, oh, okay, well, it's really not that big of an opportunity. But, you know, you see companies like Apple, think of all the services that they're providing now to you, you know, data storage, you know, all these other things, and it's billions of dollars now, and it's a very substantial part of their business. So yeah, that hurdle and you know, having the people and just kind of the diligence to plow through that and, you know, go through all those obstacles that you may see, it takes a special person to go through that and bring that to, you know, the finish line.
Well, you also have to consider, how are those new business models, those new services going to be perceived by the customer, you know, who maybe sees you as a product company or something like that? Obviously a very consumer oriented example, but a good friend of mine last week took his Toyota Highlander to the dealer because the remote start had stopped working. And what he found out was that he was only on the first year free part of the subscription of the remote start service, and if he wanted it, he needed to pay $19.95 a month going forward. So changing that business model of how products are received and interacted with may generate not just positive things, but potentially negative experiences as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're pointing to the, you know, the inherent, as John was mentioning, really, the just kind of riskier profile of innovations in a space that you're not used to innovating in. You're used to innovating in product, you're used to making better, cooler, new features or what have you. That's one thing, but innovating in, you know, new service delivery methods or business models does introduce a whole new set of risks. And John, you've mentioned that before, that you've used agile teams and Scrum methodology as a way of kind of organizing for managing risk, and frankly, as a way of de-risking initiatives. Can you peel that back a bit more for our listeners?
Yeah, that was an effort that we did. I mean, we had a couple agile coaches in the innovation team and to really help our market segment teams. And, you know, I think what that really brought forward in the organization is, you know, oftentimes you run projects, it's more planning, and you just kind of go from, you know, phase one, two, three, and forward. But Agile, you know, it's a way and it's an approach of, you know, really looking at your project and focusing on those areas that are high risk and addressing those first. Versus, you know, maybe waiting later into the program and or the project and And then you realize, wow, this actually is a really big issue, and it may, you know, end the project life, and you've waited way too long. So I think that whole approach, and, you know, it's a disciplined approach, agile or the Scrum framework, you know, it requires frequent meetings and reprioritizing your backlog. And I think that's all really good, because sometimes projects, you know, people might meet only every month, and, you know, maybe that's not sufficient enough. And then there was, you know, some other efforts that we use, you know, external consultants of, you know, we call them learning plans, but in these high risk areas or these business model innovations or these innovations, you know, there's an approach that you use to, you know, looking at the business model canvas and looking at the areas that are of high risk and de-risking them first. So, you know, it's all about prioritization and de-risking, and that, you know, that's a learning process itself. So getting people to be good at that and focusing on doing good tests to de-risk those areas that, you know, have high uncertainty.
John, in the short time that we have left, I'm wondering, are there any examples of success stories you can share, either from your own experience or others of, you know, organizations that you may be aware of that have kind of employed this innovation process and succeeded?
Yeah, I mean, within the water business at DuPont, I mean, there's a couple examples, and this is public information. You know, last year, well, as I mentioned, you know, we were exploring new areas like in green energy or sustainability. So, you know, we explored new paths that people are looking at for energy, for example, in green hydrogen. You know, that's becoming, you know, an area of high investment in Europe and in the U.S. as well. You know, the governments are spending a lot of money in that because, you know, it uses essentially water, splits water in two, and you have, you know, hydrogen, which is a very clean source of energy. But we did bring forward a new product for that space for green hydrogen last year. So we're really excited about that new, totally new, market space for us, and, you know, expect a significant growth there. You know, another area, again, kind of in that energy space is, you know, the whole EV market is driving, you know, consumption of lithium. Lithium typically comes from mining of rock, and there's a, you know, various processes that you use to extract the lithium. But another source of lithium is in brine. So that come from the earth. California has brines. South America has, you know, many sources of brines. You can use membranes to take and concentrate that lithium in those brines, and it's a very kind of efficient process. So we had another, you know, product, a membrane product that we launched last year for addressing that market. So, you know, those are kind of two new market spaces for us. We didn't know anything about them. They're rapidly growing, you know, so we had to dedicate some resources to that space and, you know, develop those products. So that was pretty exciting. So those are the ones you hear about. Believe me, there's a lot of ones that we explored that were killed. But, you know, that's part of the process, is that you're going to look at new areas. They may not be the right timing for you. You might not have the right technology, and they were killed quite quickly. We only had a few, you know, fractions of people working on them, and we brought them to a certain stage and said, no, those aren't good. But, you know, it's nice to have a couple wins last year that we brought forward.
That's very cool. I like, I'm sure, you know, everybody can certainly understand that there'd be some innovations that got cast away along the way to those two successes. But, there are two very interesting examples that you shared, and it just speaks to the cutting edge nature of the work that you were doing. I'm curious, John, is any kind of parting advice that you might share with our listeners who are endeavoring to encourage more innovation in their organizations and maybe running into a roadblock, or, you know, any kind of last nugget of advice of how to think about it that might get them over the finish line?
Well, you know, in reflecting back on my career and that, you know, that time I spent in, you know, working on innovation, very intense time, you know, really, I think about growth now for an enterprise, and how do you approach growth through, you know, innovation, and the approach of, you know, thinking like this two-pronged way of innovate, staying, you know, in the core, innovating there, being, having a certain resource allocation there, but it's an and. It's and, you know, explore new areas. It takes very different thinking, but for sustained growth in your enterprise or your business, it's really imperative that you think about that. Again, you'll take the approach that whatever is appropriate for your growth plans. But I think that's just so critical, you know, to enable sustained growth is to really kind of have these two pathways. And, you know, I think all enterprises have the capabilities and abilities, you know, within them to do that. Might take some capability building of the people and, you know, the processes, but there's enough information out there for people to do that.
It has been a fascinating conversation, John. Thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Well, thanks. Enjoy the conversation.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Carmen. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for listening to The Cooler Ring with Carmen Perry and Jeff White. Don't miss a single manufacturing marketing insight. Subscribe now at KulaPartners.com/The Cooler Ring. That's KULA Partners.com/The Cooler Ring.